Don't turn it off now. You need this stuff. Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio Network.
Why are conservatives allergic to the truth? Just what, not why, right now on The Voice of Reason.
You are about to enter the arena of real news and factual commentary on The Voice of Reason here on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Now, here are your hosts for today's program, Ed Golly and Joe Reinhardt.
And Michelle will be checking in with us later on in the show, along with our top 10 list, the top 10 best and brightest who have resigned or been fired from the Trump cabinet. Also, we're going to hear from Andrew the Barber during the program, see some of the things he had to say and what we think about him. Trump insists that we open the schools, claiming that children are all but immune to the coronavirus. Betsy DeVos has claimed that children are virtual virus stoppers. If you're scratching your head over that, you undoubtedly are doing so because you heard the report that was released Friday by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which detailed an outbreak at a sleepaway camp up in Georgia last month. 260 children and staff, which was more than three quarters of those tested, meaning they didn't simply test everybody at the camp, but more than three quarters of them contracted the virus less than a week after spending time in close quarters together. The kids had a median age of 12. It's just kind of about the average age of a kid going to school these days, isn't it? So unlike staff, they were not required to wear masks or to open windows to keep the cabins well ventilated. Well, that report is undoubtedly going to be adding fuel to the already fraught nationwide discussion about whether sending children back to crowded school buildings is worth the risk, in large part because so little data has been available about kids' vulnerability to the infection, their ability to transmit the virus, and we don't really know the long-term effects. A kid could have the virus, not really know it, but it could affect them long-term.
Well, plus, worse than that, it could give it to me.
Well, of course. They could bring the virus home and spread it long before they know they even have it. But we still don't know what the lifelong effects of contracting the virus could be to a child's nervous system, brain,
I see where people have suffered from symptoms for months and months, and it causes brain damage and heart damage and all kinds of other maladies or malaise that we don't even know about yet.
Yeah, so this idea that somehow kids...
That we should experiment on our children is foolish.
You're right. I mean, the statistics are just shocking. It says of those who became infected, 231 of them were ages 17 or younger, and all the remaining 29 were adults. That's about the proportion of students to teachers in schools. And that's the thing. Are we forgetting there are adults in the school systems, like teachers, janitors, administrators, and so on? They're all prone to getting the virus. So why are we going to make this an experimentation lab? You know, we know that this is a very dangerous disease.
I was willing to sacrifice my grandmother, which I've said on previous, and my wife's brother as well, which I've said on previous shows. But I think throwing children into the fire is a little beyond the pale.
Well, I've said it before, Joe, and I'll say it again. Nothing fails like prayer. And the Alaska Supreme Court has affirmed my contention by affirming a lower court decision that removed an elderly woman from the care of her daughter after the daughter, this would have been an adult daughter, of course, that was taking care of her. The daughter declined to treat the woman's epilepsy and said she would use prayer to treat her, even in a medical emergency, which is curious because what's our national motto? In God we trust. Yeah. What's our state motto? Same thing. Same. It's over on all of our currency. It has been integrated into our Pledge of Allegiance, converting it into a prayer of allegiance, this idea that somehow we're a special nation because we're all Christians and God looks after us and therefore we should trust in the God. But when you do it, the court says you can't do it.
Right.
I'm convinced we've never been visited by aliens, because if they looked down and saw what we're doing and said, wait a minute, the government tells them to do something, then the government says you can't do it, we better get out of here. These people don't know what logical thinking is yet. I mean, we don't drive around without seat belts and say, well, I trust in God that I won't have an accident.
Or I don't even bother to slow down for traffic lights.
Why turn on your headlights at night? You're likely not going to hit anything. Go ahead and text while you drive.
When it's your time, it's your time, you know.
Just trust in God, right?
Again, as I like to say, there's no one more nervous than a Christian Scientist with appendicitis.
The court said this, if the woman, the mother, required immediate medical attention, the results could be fatal. For this reason, while religious liberty is a fundamental right under the Alaska Constitution, the state's actions in this case are justified by a compelling interest.
Other states acknowledge this sort of thing. The state of Florida, in its constitution, has a religious freedom clause, but it specifically prohibits any religious acts that are harmful or dangerous. I mean, you know, they used to sacrifice children to please the rain gods and that sort of thing. And Kentucky passed a law where no one under 18 can handle snakes in church. So there are other states, and I'm sure all of them have rules of this sort, who realize there are certain limitations on what you can do with the help of God and two friends.
We've all seen the commercials on TV that the Republican National Party is running on behalf of Trump, showing the criminal breaking into an occupied house,
right,
the woman frantically dialing 911, only to be told that they'll get back to her in a few days. First of all, burglars generally don't break into occupied homes.
Right.
You don't know who the heck is going to be sitting on the other side of the door. But I suppose it's a possible scenario. But the fascinating thing about that is that it creates the illusion that the Democrats are going to defund police departments if they take the White House and Congress. Well, so if you're a conservative and you made it through high school, you should know that the city of Clearwater's police department is not funded by the federal government. It's funded by the property owners in the city of Clearwater, unless they own a church or a cemetery or a school or something like that.
99% of all criminal laws are state and local. The federal government has very few laws having to do with crime.
So I can assure you that Trump had absolutely no influence on the funding of the Waldo, Florida Police Department's 2020 fiscal budget.
Traffic laws did.
Yeah, you're right.
It must have been.
But this assertion that if a Democrat ends up in the White House, all these police departments are going to be shut down is ludicrous, because the federal government doesn't have any control over city police departments.
Well, if the Democrats gain control, from what I understand, they're not looking for a president. They're looking to install a dictator, which is why they've destroyed the economy, why they're destroying everyone's health, so that they can depose the current occupant of the White House, public housing, and install a dictatorship and take everybody's guns and make it the law that only homosexuals can own rifles and things like that. I know this is true because I got an email from a friend of mine saying pretty much what I just said.
The whole foundation of this advertisement is false advertising, implying that if we put a Democrat in the White House, then we're going to have this spike in crime and economic collapse, right? By the way, Joe, did you happen to see that 1.2 million Americans filed for unemployment? It went down from 1.4 the previous
and
week.
The jobs numbers, available jobs, went down as well.
So now, as I understand it, some 55 million Americans are out of work. That's more than the population of probably the whole west coast of the country, California, Oregon.
Florida has 20 million.
Right. So 2.5 times our population is out of work. It represents a third of the workforce in America, some $18 billion.
Same numbers as 1933.
Exactly.
We collapsed a third of the economy in the last 90 days, unheard of.
Unprecedented in the history of currency itself. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is historic by far. The president loves his superlatives. I don't know why he doesn't boast about
that. Great numbers there, boy.
The implication is if we put a Democrat in office, we're going to have a spike in crime and a collapse in the economy.
Right, and a dictator. And you can get rid of the Bill of Rights. You can just kiss it goodbye. That'll be the first.
Communist gula. What am I missing here? Mm-hmm. We're experiencing economic collapse, a depression, and a spike in crime. Who's in office?
Yeah,
right. Oh, I don't get it. What are they? They're selling us where you need to change
and
for the better. When
we're worrying more about what might happen as opposed to what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Distraction.
Well, yeah. I mean, Trump told us that we would all be going back to church for Easter, and then his principal advisor Kushner said we'd be out of the economic depression by the 1st of July. And in fact, it just keeps getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see why we want to keep these guys in power for another 4 years. They've really got a handle on everything. The press secretary on Tuesday, that's Kylie McEnany, blamed the spike in crime in several cities over the past month on the movement to defund the police, making a logical leap that criminologists say has no basis in fact. She said that the crime rate in New York City, with local official support for defunding the police, which generally means really reallocating the funds from police departments to social services and programs, not just simply doing away with the police
department. Just taking the money and giving it to the streets department.
Right. Portland, I think, just defunded theirs by 40%, I believe I heard overnight.
The police would be so much better off if they weren't responsible for trying to enforce morality laws and blue laws and speeding laws and all kinds of things.
And getting involved in domestic violence.
Nothing to do with crime, with assault or theft, which constitutes 99% of all crime is either assault or theft, one or the other. If they would concentrate on that and leave the people who are committing crimes of their own volition, in other words, drug users, people who speed and that sort of thing, leave that sort of thing to people who are trained to handle it. You don't have to be competent with a Glock 45 to give a guy a traffic ticket.
Yes, that's right. The spokesman for de Blasio, the mayor of New York, said this, Kaylee's comments don't make any sense and don't add up, but that isn't anything new. Hmm. What's more telling is the blame the White House is trying to cast as they refuse to take action on a stimulus in face of the worst economic drop in history and a pandemic that is reshaping daily life. We've been clear it's a perfect storm that is driving this shooting uptick, and Washington needs to do their part for once. The absurdity of the statement is that the budgets are established a year in advance. So even municipalities that have decided to start defunding haven't enacted it yet. It's too simple for them to figure out, right? So they're telling us that that's the cause. It's just another way of blaming the Democrats, as if there's any connection between the two. Let's try it in a few municipalities and see if things work out better. Maybe people will like the police more if they weren't engaged in so much bullying.
There are a couple of examples of municipalities that have tried that. One in Vermont didn't go very well. Another in, I think, Massachusetts that disbanded their whole police force and then rehired them and retrained them. And that went very well, apparently. So obviously with any sort of change you start out to change for the better and you hope that that's how it ends up. But there are always, bumps in the road.
Sure. Exactly. Yeah. And, I mean, it is the way government works. When programs are implemented, they need to be modified over time.
Sure.
And that's why instead of simply dumping the Affordable Care Act it can be modified. But what I've never heard from the president is why he considers it a disaster. He never explains that.
He's a week overdue on the health plan he was going to roll out 2 weeks ago.
Right, which if he'd had his way and John McCain had died prior to that vote, he may have. Affordable care would have been gone. Just now it turns out we need it most. Right? Because so many people are losing their health care when they lose their jobs,
of course.
And where do they turn?
When they need it the most.
Exactly. Right. So where do they turn? But he's had 3.5 years now to tell us what this great plan is going to be. I've never heard a word about it. Mm-hmm. All he's ever told us is that it's a better plan that will cost less and provide better coverage. Tell us how it works.
Well, I think one of the reasons that he's held back is because he hasn't a plan and he hasn't got a clue as to how to make one. That's slowing him down.
Mm-hmm. He continually ignores the emoluments clause of our Constitution and has made his entire presidency focus first and foremost, I think, on transferring as much money from the United States Treasury into his failing businesses,
his
resorts. Exactly. Paul Waldman in the Washington Post says that you can add another item to the list of Trump's impeachable offenses. The New York Times reported last week that Trump directed the U.S. ambassador to Britain, a fellow named Woody Johnson, to ask the British government to steer the British Open to Trump's Turnberry Golf Resort in Scotland. So Johnson, who is the ambassador, he's a billionaire Trump donor with no previous diplomatic experience at all, told colleagues in February of 2018 that he'd asked the Secretary of State for Scotland about the possibility of holding the famed tournament at Turnberry, which would have pumped millions into the financially ailing resort. The unethical request unsettled numerous diplomats, including Johnson's deputy, a fellow named Lewis Lukens, who recounted it in an email to officials at the State Department. And what do you think happened to him? He was fired a few months later.
What took him so long?
Corruption of this magnitude, quote, would have gotten any other president removed from office, unquote. But after Trump's years of violating ethical norms, it barely raises an eyebrow.
They practically crucified Nixon because they accepted a Republican cloth coat for his wife and a dog, Checkers, for his children. And he said, I'm not giving them back. My kids love the dog. I'm not giving that back. But that was for a dog and a coat with a total value of something in double figures. Double digits.
As corrupt as Nixon was, though.
$100 million.
Yeah, I never had the sense that he was out for money. He had an agenda for the country.
Yeah, he wanted power.
He hated hippies, so he implemented all the drug laws, figuring they'd all end up in jail.
And they did.
And they did, right?
Cost us trillions of dollars.
But he wasn't after money. He just had a very clear agenda for what he wanted for the country, and he was plagued with the Vietnam War, which also plagued
LBJ. For which he had a plan, somewhat like Trump's.
Secret plan.
Like Trump's plan.
Yeah, but eventually it was inevitable we had to get out of there. And I think Trump is suffering from what I call LBJ syndrome, because Johnson fell into the presidency, of course, after the assassination of Kennedy, and the war was already ramping up. McNamara and all the goons were telling us how well we were doing, and then we went off the gold standard, so he could, borrow all the money he needed to finance the war, and then realized that he was in a quagmire that he couldn't get out of. North Vietnam wasn't going to back down. He couldn't nuke Hanoi because it could trigger a world war. It bothered him so much that he decided not to run for re-election. The problem Trump has now is that we're seeing that when introduced to the test of genuine leadership on a national scale, he has failed hopelessly, spending the first 2 months of the virus outbreak simply telling us it's going to magically or miraculously disappear. And then it didn't. Then he hands it off to the governors. Then he wants to take back control. He's just all over the map on this. while things are getting steadily worse
again,
for it.
Again, do you know anybody personally who's died of COVID-19? Anybody? Do you know?
No, I don't.
A hospital, I understand, if you test positive, they put you in the hospital. The hospital gets a big check. You know, lots of money, so they have an incentive to inflate the numbers. I'm repeating what I hear from my friend down in South Florida, that the whole thing, again, the 155,000 dead people is a hoax.
Yeah.
Those people aren't really dead. They're just pretending. They just think they're dead.
And now it's about 160, I think, and still climbing.
However many it is.
And of course, The experts are telling us that we may see another spike. That if
I think they should have a dead plague tour for people who doubt the veracity, like my good friend down in Okeechobee, sort of like the Hollywood tour. You could just go around to the morgues and the graveyards and the hospitals and see for yourself that they don't even have room. They're keeping them, storing the bodies in semi-trucks, etc. You know, maybe a truckload of dead bodies would sway your opinion slightly as to the veracity of the event.
Well, the thing that puzzles me is that the president says that because he implemented the restriction on people
travel
coming
from China and Europe too.
So why didn't it work? We still have the biggest outbreak, and I think we rank fourth in the world for deaths now, with only 4.5% of the population. We have, I think, 22% of the cases. He's boasting that he did something that clearly didn't work. He's blaming China, and it's the way China is. And it could have started in Thailand or Africa, anywhere.
Doesn't matter if you're dead.
Right, and it's all the more reason to keep funding the World Health Organization and the CDC, because they can respond, within a week to these things and try to catch them and stifle them.
How much better your widow would feel if she found out that the virus came from Thailand instead of China.
Yeah. By the way, did you see the latest Lincoln Project ad?
No, I haven't.
Oh, I'm
sorry.
Send it over to you.
I will make a point to do that.
Okay.
Can I take just 30 seconds? I want to make two corrections from last week's show.
Okay.
One, I confused Ben Carson and Herman Cain. I'll try never to do that again. Secondly, I made a comment about Woodrow Wilson's 14 points for the League of Nations and said that God only had 12. Actually, it was Clemenceau, and he said correctly, God only had 10, referring to the Ten Commandments. So I want to get the numbers right.
Oh, okay. Right.
And Woodrow Wilson is, by the way, a Democrat.
A Democrat, yes.
Okay.
In fact, I found the source that I'd gotten that
born
from,
in
and
Virginia.
They found
You're
out,
right.
too.
He was born in Virginia, though. He had Southern heritage. So.
And he was
Princeton,
yeah. A professor at Princeton. Yeah. And, of course, his wife took over for him when he got ill, didn't she?
I'm not
during,
sure.
I think that was Woody Wilson, and his wife just started assuming those responsibilities.
Common
Let's
practice.
Take a look at some poll numbers, which nobody ever believes. 34% of Americans identify as conservative. That's down from a high of 40% in only February. 26% identify as liberal, 36% as moderate. I hope Trump doesn't listen to this program. He might. But it seems to me his efforts are misguided. He seems to always be targeting his base, 35%, that are going to vote for him no matter what he does,
right.
And he needs to be going after that 36% that identify themselves as moderate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think his divisive tactics are what might be driving them away, plus their recognition that he's just totally incapable of dealing with this whole crisis
he's
that we're in, both the economic
for him
and
his entire life, but he doesn't have Fred to bail him out.
Yeah, that's true.
There are certain things about the virus that no matter how much he lies about it, there's still 160,000 dead people who are contradicting him. Talk about the silent majority.
That's right. An all-time high of 80% of Americans now believe the country is headed in the wrong direction. A majority disapprove of how President Trump is handling the virus pandemic. That's 68%.
Wow.
So that's like over
two-thirds.
That's
a substantial majority.
Mm-hmm. They disapprove of how he's handling education, with 63%, same number for health care and the economy. Now he has a 51% disapproval rate for the economy, and I'm going to guess that's going to keep tumbling down.
And I'm betting the 38 or so percent who don't disapprove of his handling of the coronavirus problem are, like the gentleman I cited earlier, they think it's a hoax. And so there's nothing for him to handle, basically. All those people aren't really dead and all those numbers, and it's just a scam to get lots of money to the hospitals and the healthcare workers and other greedy people of their ilk.
And then we talk about mental soundness. That's one of the, I guess, one of the talking points that the conservatives are typically levying against Biden, claiming that he's got advanced dementia and doesn't even recognize his wife, which, of course, is nonsense. But listen to this. A Fox News poll just last month found that 47% think Biden has the mental soundness to be president, compared to only 43% for Trump. And there's only, what, a couple years difference in their age, mm-hmm. right? Why did Trump take the mental, the recognition test, right?
Right.
Why did the physicians think that it was important to know whether you can tell the difference between a camel and a piss ant? I think it very likely has something to do with him having gone to to Walter Reed in November of last year.
They should have asked him, when anybody can recognize a camel. What they should have asked him was it a dromedary or a Bactrian?
But, the difference, I think, would be that Biden, even if he is suffering from a little bit of dementia and he is a little bit forgetful and he does mangle some words once in a while, he understands that he can bring in people that are competent, skilled, experienced cabinet members to work with him to make the decisions that are in the best interest of the country and the economy, and try to move us into a position where we are meeting the 21st century head on and converting to projects that involve clean energy and clean transportation, whereas Trump is just the opposite. He wants to push us back to the 50s,
coal.
Where we dig up coal and burn
lots of gas, pump all the gas you can.
Yeah, drive around these gas guzzling, thin back Cadillacs like Perry Mason drove around, 8 miles to a gallon, and so on. And he wants the whole country to look like Beaver Cleaver. Well, he's forgetting that Eldridge Cleaver is also a citizen of this country and has just as much right to citizenship as he does. And so,
no relation. So far as we know.
That's
great.
Anyway, I think, the idea that Biden is trying to avoid the debates is not as poppycock. He right. has every intention of going to those debates and is looking forward to it. At least he claims he is.
Besides, Trump thinks he dominated Hillary the debates so conclusively that he can do the same thing with Biden. Stand there and leer over his shoulder while he speaks.
So thus is the position of the world today. We're going to try our first effort at Juvenile Jeopardy after a short break here on
Great.
The Dan Talk Radio Network. You're listening to the Voice of Reason, Joe Reinhardt, Ed Golly, and we are about to be joined by Michelle.
Talking Sports and Knockout Radio is one of, if not the longest running sports radio show in Tampa Bay, and heard every Wednesday from 2 to 4 p.m. right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network. From football to MMA and pizza to travel, we talk it all. Every Wednesday from 2 to 4 p.m., we walk the walk and talk the talk. If you have a story you'd like us to cover, just go to knockoutradio.com and click the contact link and send us a suggestion. That's knockoutradio.com/talkingsports.
This is Paulie with the Brian Cash Clause Coupon Book.
The Brian Cash Clause Coupon Book is giving out free masks. Just call 727-804-6082. If you need a mask, we'll get it to you for free. That's our donation back to the community. The Brian Cash Clause Coupon Book. Free masks. 727-804-6082. Free masks. The Brian Cash Clause Coupon Book.
Don't turn it off now. You need this stuff. Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio Network.
This This is Juvenile Jeopardy on The Voice of Reason. Now, here is your host for today's program, Ed Colley.
Thank you, Don. Our two contestants today are Michelle and Joe. Let's look at the three categories: presidential science, by the numbers, and the lies of Texas are upon you. Michelle, you drew first. Go ahead and select your category, please.
Lies for 200.
Okay, lies for 200. The answer is, I will never lie to you on behalf of President Trump. Michelle?
What was the first lie Kayleigh McEnany told the press?
Correct. For $200, still your turn.
Lies for 400.
Answer, I'm going to be working for you. I'm not going to have time to play golf. Joe?
What was Trump's 28th campaign lie in August 2016?
Correct. That's right. For 400. Joe, you still have the board.
Give me by the numbers for 200.
The answer is 130. Joe?
How many rounds of golf has Trump played since taking office?
That's right. Okay, Joe, still your turn.
Numbers for 400?
138 million. Joe?
What is the estimated cost to taxpayers for Trump's golf outings since he took office?
Right again. Okay, Joe.
Numbers for 600.
The number is 24. Joe?
How many lies does Trump average per day?
That's correct. Joe, you still control the board.
Presidential science for 200.
Answer, it will miraculously just disappear. Michelle?
What is COVID-19?
That's right. Still your turn.
Science? For 400.
They are the only mechanical devices known to cause cancer. Michelle?
What are windmills?
Correct. For 400. Science for 600, Michelle?
Science for 600.
Okay. Answer is, injecting this could likely disinfect the human body from coronavirus. Michelle?
What is a vaccine?
No, sorry, incorrect, Joe.
Oh, yes. What is Lysol?
Correct. Now, remember, the category is presidential science.
All right.
Joe?
Must be lies for 600.
Final answer in this category, I will produce my tax returns if I become the nominee of the party. Joe?
Oh, yeah. What it was Trump's 93rd campaign lie? I have a list.
That's absolutely correct. Okay, that's all our time for today. Join us next time on The Voice of Reason for Juvenile Jeopardy. Hello, Michelle. What's shaking with you today?
Hello. Well, today I wanted to talk about, there's always something brewing.
Yeah.
And we've got the mail-in voting controversy. And, of course, we have a state tie to this because Trump has been going after mail-in voting, and he seems to not know that there is no difference between absentee voting and mail-in voting. He says, absentee voting is just fine, but mail-in voting is not, and there is technically zero difference between the two. They have to be verified to be sent out and verified when they're brought in. As a matter of fact, in our own state of Florida, they have eliminated the term absentee voting. It is all called mail-in voting now.
Wow.
So someone needs to tell the president that, since this is where his residence is. But as you already may know, there are already multiple states that do most of their voting by mail. And if this was a Jeopardy question, would you know those states?
Nevada? What is Nevada?
Nope. Maine. No, nope. We've got Colorado, Hawaii, Oregon, Utah, and Washington. And, they aren't just mail-in voting, but a bulk of theirs, that they automatically do it there. And you can still have the option to vote Election Day, but I just watched on TV an interview with a Republican a congressperson from Colorado. They've never had any problems with fraud whatsoever, and they use mail-in voting, and for the last few years, and it's been no problem.
Well, there's two things that I think about this. That first of all, he implies that we're just going to airdrop thousands of ballots, and anybody can just pick them up, fill them out, send them in, and they'll be counted. But that's not the way this whole system works. And second of all, his assertion that the post office will be overwhelmed. Well, first of all, everybody doesn't vote. They're children. They aren't registered, or they just don't care to. Or in this case, in Florida, they're felon. And a lot of people are going to still go to the poll. We're not limiting it to mail-in ballots. So when he says the post office isn't equipped to handle all these ballots, how do they handle Christmas when people send out Christmas cards? You're talking about maybe 20% of the population sending in one piece of mail. So why is it then when Home Depot sends out a flyer advertising their specials, it doesn't overwhelm the post office and shut us down? Right. You know, it's ridiculous. Of course they can handle
it. Just to improve the chances of them being overwhelmed, he's doing everything he can to defund them.
Yeah.
Not like defunding the police. Defunding the post office is a little different.
It is. And the other day, it caused quite a stir because he's been carrying on and trumpeting this whole, oh, it's all mail-in voting is terrible. And all of a sudden, in a complete 360-degree pivot that was totally unexpected, he turned around and said two nights ago, but not in Florida.
Yeah.
Florida, you guys, everybody vote in Florida. So I thought, what? I was sitting here watching the TV when I saw that, and he just kind of announced it out of the blue air. And I said, well, what's going on? Well, I did a little research. Found out, and this is verified fact, that the Republican Party of Florida went to Trump and said, whoa, you are saying that mail-in voting is all fraudulent and it's going to just, you know, we should get rid of it, when in fact, Florida is a huge place for mail-in voting for many reasons. We have a lot of elderly people here. We have people, obviously, that have residence here, and then maybe they go away in the fall or, you know, late summer, fall, they're away. And also, we've got COVID going on, COVID-19, you know, a pandemic. A lot of people don't want to go, particularly if you have physical issues, out to a polling place. Well, the number of Democrats who have requested mail-in votes from Florida is 1.9 million. And the number of Republicans, and this was as of July 31st, the number of Republicans is 1.3 million. And they started doing the math and realized, whoa, if we sit there and give this message, you know, it's a fraud, you don't bother mail-in voting, a lot of those Republicans are just going to say, well, our president says it's a fraud, I'm not even going to bother. And then you got all the Democrats who traditionally have been mail-in voting, and they are going to overwhelm. So he did this complete reversal, and then he said, and hold on to your seats on this one, Florida is known for their safe and secure system of voting.
Hmm.
And I thought, the land of the hanging chad?
Yeah,
are you kidding? I mean, he went on, and then he said, they have wonderful and, you know, great and wonderful governor Ron DeSantis, and before him, Rick Scott, and they have done a great job. And so, you know, and now it's coming down to this. Why did they just sue Nevada? It's a Democratic governor. He's turned voting, you know, this common right that we have in America. Not only has he turned the pandemic partisan, voting now. You know, if you're a Republican, then you can run your state and have mail-in voting. But if you're a Democrat, there's going to be fraud. You know, that's basically the message that he's giving to the American people right now. So, now, Ed, you mentioned the post office, and Joe, you mentioned it, the post office trying to, what he's been doing to that. And I did a little research on that, and it was, yes, we all know the post office has financial issues now, and there's several reasons. One is the lame duck Republican-led Congress passed a law in 2006, is it Republicans, to pre-fund health benefits for future retirees, not pension, but health benefits. For 50 or 75 years, They did this, and there is a question whether they did that on purpose to intentionally sink the post office. That I cannot answer that to. But that is one of the reasons when you've got an agency with a union, it's one of the last federal union organizations we have. And
right.
They,
and we don't require we don't require other federal agents to agencies to do that. The air traffic controllers don't need to that, and of course they're not actually more of a business like the post office is, which is still staff providing a service, but they don't need to do it.
It's very odd that Republicans would even care about health benefits because we know how they handle Obamacare. Right. I was rather shocked by that, but it was a Republican-led lame duck Congress that did that. The second thing is we all know, because people do most of their bills now by electronically.
Mm-hmm.
So, mail has services gone down. However, conversely, we do a lot more packages by mail now. And he goes after Jeff Bezos, the head of Amazon, all the time and says he doesn't pay enough. Well, we all know he hates Jeff Bezos because Jeff Bezos is also the head of the Washington Post, which he calls fake news and hates tremendously. But the bottom line is there are many reasons that the post office is struggling now. And it's, right now they are fighting for this CARES Act. And part of that CARES Act is a $10 billion request to keep it solvent until October 2021. But the bottom line is here. He's trying to cast doubt, and this is another thing he's done to the post office. He just named his postmaster general this summer. Who did he pick? Now, if you have an agency that the post office is not going away, postal service is not going away. If wouldn't you think you would drain the swamp and put somebody in charge who comes from the postal service and who understands it? Has institutional knowledge and who can really work with the system and learn how to make it better. No, in Trump's case, what we're going to do is we're going to put in one of your high dollar donors, who is Louis DeJoy, a businessman from North Carolina, who's ahead of the fundraising for the Republican National Convention in Charlotte, which God knows what we can talk about that later, what's happening to that. But so he's in charge of it now. The guy he's the first guy in two decades with zero experience with the Postal Service. And he was put in there by Trump because he's a huge Trump devotee, I should call it. He gave him $2 million for his campaign, and he's given lots of other money to his various other campaigns, but he's given personally $2 million. And by the way, Trump has also stacked the board of governors as people have left their posts. He now has three Republicans and one Democrat on the postal board of governors. So he's basically, he's turned this into his own partisan situation where they're not going to fight or anything. They're going to do his bidding, and that's his plan. So he has no intention of making the post office a better, put it in a better financial situation or whatsoever.
Well, the reasoning is that since Trump is pretty well stuck on his base being willing to vote for him in November, and since he can't expand his base, his only other alternative to the presidency is to suppress the votes of his opponent. He can't get more voters, so if he can have them have fewer voters, he'll have a shot. So he's doing everything he can, and he has as much as admitted that his only chance of winning is to suppress the vote.
And don't you think that it's evidence that he never really intended to even be nominated 4 years ago, because for one thing he assured us he'd show us his tax returns, and the other thing he said was that he was going to completely self-fund his campaign. So what's he doing taking these $1 million campaign donations from the billionaires?
They all supported, the end. Well, the other thing is, it's so obvious with this postal situation, because again, it's like you said, suppress the vote coming in from, let's just take Florida, for example, by the Democrats. But when the Republicans party of Florida came to him and whispered in his ear and they said, oops, if you suppress the votes of the Democrats, you're also suppressing the 1.3 million votes coming in from the Republicans here. And so that's kind of backfires on him. Because if you're a Republican who wants to vote by mail, particularly in this era, you know, now, I don't know if you guys have already done your vote for this, you know, the primaries coming up here. But I've been told that they have a very safe situation at the I'm going to do early voting next week, and I've been told it's very safe. They've got disinfectant, they give you a fresh pen and all that. They even let you keep the pen over in Tampa. They said, here's your pen, you keep it. And also they have the mail-in ballots, which you drive to a location, and it's a secured postal ballot box that you put it right there, and there's someone manning it right there. And so you can do it either in person or through these mail-in ballot boxes. There's plenty of ways to do it. But by him talking about, you know, he gets up there and he just lies, and he continues the lies, even though he is fact-checked all the time. And, you know, at people who are low information or poorly educated, or I hate to say it, a lot of his base is non-college educated white people from rural areas. And I'm not knocking that, but I'm saying that is a fact. That makes up a big portion of his base. Do you agree? I mean, we all know that.
Yes, that's what the statistics say.
Yeah, they say that. So they're just going to listen to him. They're not going to question. They're not going to research. They're not going to find out. And in a tweet the other day, he actually backtracked and said, well, you can call it whatever you want, absentee or mail-in, you know, it's fraudulent. And so, therefore, that's when he was talked to by the Republican Party, and that's how all of a sudden Florida's not fraudulent. You know, when I think of Florida, don't we all think of we were the ones that ruined the election in 2000, you know?
Yeah, and we had the Broward County debacle.
Florida is based on fraud. Back in the 20s, in the real estate booms, they had what were called the binder boys that would meet the tourists at the train and take a deposit on land that didn't even exist. You know, and by the time they found out that they didn't really own anything, 6 months had gone by, and you know, so Florida
and you
is
know this
fraud
vote
based.
By mail. This vote by mail, I just want to say, I could give you a list as, you know, long as this, my whole state here, but we've got Trump and Melania, a vote by mail, Ivanka and Jared. Jared, they requested absentee or mail voting, and Ivanka screwed up something and it was thrown out for the New York governor's race. And Jared never sent his ballot back. I looked that up. The Pence's vote by mail. Kayleigh McEnany, by the way, 11 times has voted by mail. And she was the very person who stood up there and talked about the fraud, you know?
Yeah.
And again, you're not allowed to use the word absentee in Florida. It's all vote by mail. The governor, the GOP National Committee chairwoman, Rona McDonald, Wilbur Ross, is he still alive? I just never know when he's the commerce secretary that's about 120 years old. He has voted 15 times by mail. And here's
in the
one
same
I love.
Election.
Yeah, it's same election. Yeah, Secretary of Defense Mark Esper, who lives right next door to Washington, D.C. and Virginia, he has voted 3 times by mail. So I could go on and on. But whenever Trump gets up there, to me, it's another racist trope that he's doing. It, you know, if you come from a Democratic state and there's a lot of blacks or brown people and, you know, immigrant or, you know, migrants that are illegals, they're the ones that are going to vote illegally. You know, that is a racist trope. So anyway, that's my rant for the week.
Okay, we just have time for our top 10 best and brightest who have resigned or been fired from the Trump cabinet. Big Ed, open the Bombay doors and line up the Norden. First one is Steve Bannon, lasted just under 1 year. Next is
John Kelly. a retired U.S. Marine Corps general who served as the White House Chief of Staff for President Donald Trump from July 2017 to January 2019. He had previously served as Secretary of Homeland Security in the Trump administration.
Next is Hope Hicks, who actually is back. She was hired in February of this year as a counselor to Trump. She previously served as White House Communications Director from August 2017 until March of 18, and was also a White House Director of Strategic Communications.
Mick Mulvaney served in Trump's cabinet as Director of the Office of Management and Budget. He was White House Chief of Staff until 2020, and he previously served as the Acting Director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau from 2017 to 2018.
Probably our favorite and most unfortunately most short-lived was Anthony Scaramucci.
I love him.
The Mooch, Communications Director and Press Secretary, lasted 11 days in July of 2017. Curiously, he supported the presidential campaigns of Hillary and Obama. He has tweeted at various times that he has, quote, always been for strong gun control laws and that Republicans should support gay marriage.
Yeah, I like the Mooch because I like profanity.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the main reason. Ryan Zinke served as United States Secretary of the Interior 2017 until his resignation in 2019.
Next was Jeff Sessions, Attorney General forced out in 2018. I think he just lost his primary to reclaim his U.S. Senate seat.
He finally called Trump a jerk after kissing his ass all these years trying to get his support. John Bolton, oh my goodness, this is too long. National Security Advisor, fired in 2019. He alleges his tenure as Trump's National Security Advisor. They requested Chinese help to win the election. The president argued Venezuela is part of the U.S. and that he casually offered to intervene in the criminal justice system for foreign leaders and that his own senior officials mocked him behind his back. Before the summit with Putin in Helsinki, Trump asked his advisors if Finland was a part of Russia or whether it was a kind of satellite of Russia. Trump was unaware that Britain is a nuclear power.
Next was Rex Tillerson, former CEO of ExxonMobil, correctly appraised the president as a mucking moron, and finally...
Scott Pruitt served as the 14th administrator of the EPA from February 2017 to July of 2018. He converted it into the Department of Environmental Destruction. Pruitt rejects the scientific consensus on climate change. That's all another hoax. They're just in it for the money.
I still think it was a mistake that we didn't buy Iceland. What were we thinking?
Yeah, no kidding. We had the chance. I mean, we bought Alaska.
Yeah.
Seward's Folly.
That worked out pretty well.
So if you're going to buy places that freeze, what's wrong with Finland?
Any final comments, Joe, for today?
Well, no, just another dystopian week in Trump land. I'm sorry we have to concentrate on his destructiveness, internal and external.
But leave you with a quote from Alfred E. Newman. Thanks to the million unemployment claims coming in every week, the question paper or plastic now refers to many Americans' sleeping arrangements. Stay with us on the Tan Talk Network. Up next, Joy on Paper with your host, Patsy with a Z. And tomorrow morning at 10, Paul Molloy with Freedom Works, Trump Watches TV. Now is Ed Golly reminding you, if the tweet seems a little too implausible to be true, don't believe it just because somebody tweeted it.
Make them prove it.